Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or just exploring your options, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you can trust to navigate the real estate market with ease. Visit jocelynbradley.com to learn more. And let's get started at the Ask for Football Army Football Show.
Hello and welcome, Army fans. This is week 9. Army's on a bye week. We are going to review the ECU game and bring you some fun info about a resurgence of the Lambert Trophy. We're going to talk about beer, I guess. We'll get it kicked off. Rob, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. Like I said, I spent most of the day recovering from doing all the Halloween events in Orlando. So I did watch the game, and tail of two halves, maybe like tail of a quarter and a half. You know, I thought team was executing well. And then there was just that slump for a moment. And, you know, I think, like I said, it'll get corrected. I think this team, of all the Army teams that we've watched recently, will probably make those corrections in this bye week. But wasn't my favorite way to watch the game end, to be quite honest. I was a little disappointed in like that second half performance.
Yeah. Dan?
I have a different take on that series of the game, especially after I would rewatch the game Sunday afternoon, but we'll get into that later. In general, I'm doing good. Swam almost 4,000 yards today. Got my admittedly non-alcoholic beer here as we talk about the show. So yeah, man, I know, but I am 51 and this is what we do. So
I'm drinking coffee. That's what you do when you're, God, how old am I? 27 with two kids under two. all right. Well, Army is 7-0, still off to their best start since 1996. I believe that was a 9-0 start. They're ranked number 23 this week in both the Associated Press poll and the coaches poll. How do we feel about, you know, the national attention?
It's nuts, man. I told you, I did an interview with the Wall Street Journal today. You know, they're writing an article on why Army and Navy are doing better this season. And although she asked me if I wanted to be Dan or Dan OE in the article, so I guess she's going to quote me at least once. I got the sense that she was really just trying to get a sense of what questions to ask the staff. So, but like, they're calling the guy from Azure Football to get background on Army. You know, things have gone insane. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's one of the things, you know, I feel like Navy sometimes has an advantage because Baltimore, Washington is a smaller market. And so they get some good publicity in that market, whereas New York is just so big that Army sort of doesn't get the same coverage in that market that Navy gets in its market. But it's cool to see a nationally relevant paper from New York, you know, taking an interest in Army football. All right. Are we doing the commercial now, or are we, how's that working?
Hey, we got time, so I'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So check it out, y'all. If you are in the market for purchasing a house, we have the realtor for you, Jocelyn Bradley. She, if you're PCSing to the Fort Liberty area, we have the realtor for you. Jocelyn is a veteran who spent her Army career in logistics. There, she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream home when they're in the market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn has decided to support Astro Football this season, and she's the right person to get you into your home of your dreams. If you are not moving to the Fort Bragg area, she has a network of veteran realtors who can help support you move anywhere else in the country. So she should be your first call. If you go to the Astro Football website, there's a business card on the side. You can click on it, go to her website, connect with Jocelyn, and she will get you on your way. Thanks.
All right, let's hop into the review. Army got up early, headed to the locker room 24-0. Sort of a dream start for Army fans going into a game that we thought might be a low-scoring affair, a tighter game than most. Army gets fancy in the air on the first drive. First play goes for 37 yards through the air. And then the touchdown on that drive was a little fake to the perimeter run roll out, and they had two pulling slot backs who found some spot. He went to the deeper one in the end zone. I believe it was Miles Stewart. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It was.
Yeah, received that first touchdown. So he got a little fancy. And then they just kind of pounded the rock all day. You know, they had one perimeter run from Bryson Daly, which was a touchdown that wasn't supposed to be a perimeter run where he spin moved out of it. They had a perimeter run with Tyrell Robinson later, but they really didn't emphasize getting to the perimeter. They just kind of pounded the rock. Yeah, there was some throwing, but a lot of stuff between the tackles for the rest of the half. ECU storms back with three touchdowns in the final 10 minutes of the game, but never made it closer than a three-score game. I think the tightest it got was 17 points there in the fourth quarter. Army was unable to really get a perimeter run game going, as we said, but that effective passing sort of throughout the game, they were 7 of 10. I don't know if that's the most passes they've completed this year, but it sure feels like it.
Bryson Daly, when he's really on, hits about 70% of his passes. That's the second or third time he's done that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's effective, man. He, like an Army quarterback, the number one has a little bit of touch on the long throws. And number two, that last drive, but was it the last drive of the game that, you know,
they threw the back shoulder throw. And
you talk about over the middle of the field.
Yeah. That the last drive.
Yeah.
He threw the back shoulder and he caught it one handed.
I mean, talk about an element of the offense that hasn't existed before. Army threw into double coverage to a wide receiver and trusted that he was going to go up and get it. Yeah, don't get me wrong. He had a step on him before that throw. But, I mean, when has that been the case for Army football? When have you seen that throw and not immediately thought to yourself, oh, God, this is going the other way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was going the other way there for a minute when it was in the air because, you know, it was just behind the guy and – there were a couple of good contested catches in traffic. That's the one issue with the passing game is that these receivers don't necessarily get separation. So if they're throwing on schedule, you know, they're throwing in spots where you expect Army to throw, that's tough because the receivers are not necessarily getting separation. But
So some of them, right, there are some plays with separation. I think the reason that pass worked, to be honest, is because Casey Reynolds has beaten the safety enough times this year that those safeties aren't worried about where the ball is at that point. They're worried about making sure Casey Reynolds doesn't have 5 yards on him.
That's fair.
So, you know, a little bit each. And again, like I was on the podcast last week with the ECU guys, right? Army hasn't played with a deficit this year, so we haven't seen sort of desperate play calling. But I'd be interested to see what that looks like when and if it happens. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk a little statistics on the offense. So we have 442 yards of total offense, a little light this week, 295 yards of rushing on 5.3 yards per carry. Remember, I said last week, 5.0 is your litmus test. If they can exceed that, they're having a good day. They had 5 rushing touchdowns, all on the legs of Bryson Daly, 147 passing yards on those 7 completions. He was 7 for 10 and 1 passing touchdown on that first drive of the game. We get this stat line pretty much every week. A little bit lighter this week, honestly, a few short fields. So a lot of, you know, there in the first half, I think there was an interception, turnover on downs, and then a couple of punts from deep in ECU territory, gave Army some short fields, kind of restricted their offensive numbers in terms of total yards, but allowed them to get to that early 24-0 lead. Bryson Daly, as we talked about, AP National Player of the Week. I couldn't tell you the last time an Army player won AP National Player of the Week. Probably never. He's on like every quarterback awards watch list right now. The Davey O'Brien Award is the big one. He's just having a hell of a year. 7 of 10 passing with a TD. No interceptions on the year. 147 yards today this past Saturday. He had 31 carries for 171 yards and 5 tutties. Accounted for nearly 60% of team carries. A little bit different than last week. Last week, he gets the yards. He gets them on fewer carries. This week, they just let him eat. 31 carries, right? Felt like he was a part of every single play. Still able to average 5.5 yards per carry, given the fact that he had over 30 carries. And then Tyrell Robinson got in the game there with that 23-yard pickup. Fullback Kanye Udoh, quiet game, still picks up 100. 102 rushing yards on 19 carries, broke one big run for 42 yards, which was the longest rush for Army all day. Casey Reynolds, as we talked about, 3 catches, 85 yards, including that first play from scrimmage, the 37-yarder. He made an incredible one-handed catch, like we talked about, at the end of the game to set up that 6th touchdown for Daly. Guys, what do we think generally about the offense right now?
So Coach talked about this in his press conference after the game. Apparently this staff used to coach at the Citadel and they ran this offense. And he did not think they were going to be able to get outside against these safeties who knew exactly what they were looking at. So if you think about this as almost a CIC game with how good this ECU rushing defense has been, and they really are good, you know, save one game against Charlotte. They really have been very good against the run. And I thought they were pretty damn good against the run this week too, with the exception of a handful of plays. That's amazing that they actually averaged over 5 yards per carry. You know, Kanye Udo, God, that was tough sledding. For him to put together 102 yards on those particular 19 carries was very, very impressive. Because, you know, I said that I thought that they would have to key on Daly. Nope. They were stoning Udo every time. I think you could make a case that Casey Reynolds was actually the MVP for Army if you take Bryson Daly out of it. I don't know what you do if he doesn't get those three catches.
Yeah. By the way, I think Bryson Daly, there's one book now that has his Heisman odds at like +4,000, which is just unreal. I mean, that's a 2%, 3% chance of winning the Heisman.
Yeah. But go ahead and put a dollar down. You never know.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I will say is, you know, because of the stiffness of the ECU defense, that was part of the reason why they kept running the fullback power, right? Or the QB power, because you run the QB power because it basically puts your ball carrier one-on-one with a safety, right? Because you got a body on a body. So front seven's hitting front seven, and then you've got, you know, the mismatch. And they're keying off of Udo. And I think, like, here's a good question, rhetorical, don't need an answer today, but think about it this way. Which one of these players is the biggest home run hitter? Because when you look at explosive plays, you know, I wouldn't say that they're even because, you know, Daly touches the ball every play, but, like, when Udo is breaking loose in the back, into the secondary, like this season, that's almost a touchdown just about every time. So it becomes a question of, you know, which one is the more explosive player? You know, statistically, you could look at it, but the eye test, it looks like, you know, the front seven of ECU was more concerned with Kanye Udo breaking one than they were of Bryson Daly breaking one.
You know, to that point, Rob, I said, I think on Saturday on Twitter, look, this looks like they took Tulsa's game plan and just tried to execute it the best they could, right? We're not going to let you beat us up the middle. What happened in the beginning of the second half against Tulsa when those linebackers eventually softened? Kanye Udo broke for 260-plus yard touchdowns, right? Yep. Two longest runs of his career. I mean, like – they saw that Tulsa game film and they said, look, if Army's going to beat us passing, they're going to beat us passing. They're not going to beat us between the tackles. And Army was able to beat them between the tackles to an extent with Bryson Daly rushing. But
that's the amazing part though, really.
Right. Right.
I mean,
yeah, but do you always get and that's why the QB power is the +1 blocker, right? So if I'm a defense trying to play that, like, your safety is supposed to be your strongest tackler, but again, when I have, you know, my 220-pound free safety going against Bryson Daly with a head of steam, he's probably going to win that one 7 out of 10 times.
And that's only assuming that they didn't bring in Jake Rendina and he didn't block the linebacker into the safety, which is totally a thing that's happened a few times.
Yeah, which has happened. So, I mean, that, like, it's completely plausible to see that, like, yeah, that was the game plan. And, of course, it didn't work out because execution still does matter, right?
All right. We're gonna pivot from the outline here for a second because we're gonna talk a little bit more about defense specifically, and I put takes on the game after our defensive takes on the game. But let's get them all out now. There's some more things I think we should talk about, and I don't want to break up offense too much here. So number one, Rob, you mentioned that QB power. I don't know what it is, but the QB power this year just looks different. It looks different than last year out of the shotgun. It looks better than last year out of the shotgun. They did it out of the shotgun today. It looked better than last year out of the shotgun. They did it on Saturday out of the shotgun, I think twice, and they were able to pick up their yards. It's the cut blocking is gone, and they don't have a way to get Jacoby Buchanan over the middle of the line anymore, right? That play is gone. They can't cut block the first layer and have the guy smash the line.
Yep.
They've substituted that play with this QB ISO where they just all, like, zone block one way and they let Bryson Daly pick which hole looks the most open. Yeah. And I don't know what it is about this year, you know, tell me what you guys think it is, if you notice anything. But that
I have a thought.
Yeah.
So they got an extra year of blocking this scheme.
Yep.
And Kanye Udo in particular has an extra year of learning to play without the ball in his hands, learning to be a blocker. Hmm. Dude was a plebe last year. Like, yeah, right. He played very well, but he was a plebe. And oh, by the way, they've got Jake Rendina, who lives to block. Like, he doesn't even want the ball.
Yeah. Well, I think there's some truth to that. I think it's, you know, they toe dipped into that formation last season, right? And it didn't work out because of the rule changes and everything else. And they, you know, went back, threw this thing in the oven, rebaked it over the summer, and in the spring game, you know, they're slinging it all over the place. But deep down inside, it's like, hey, how do we get that execution? And the other part of it is doggone, our offensive line is probably 5 to 10 pounds heavier than they were last season as well, right? So you've got increase in line play, you've got increase in skill set, you know, and that's the other part of it is like Dan said, when you have athletes in the backfield as talented as Noah Short and Kanye Udo, and those guys are willing to block to make things happen, you've built a team that's going to be successful, right? And like, you don't have the crybaby, I need my 20 touches a game, or, you know, that kind of stuff that you would get in some other schools. And so I think it's complementary football, not only on all three, you know, all three phases of the game, but even in the offensive backfield. You know, they're blocking for each other because they want to be successful. And sometimes you just don't get that level of effort in other teams.
You know, so there's the criticism from last year's short down situations where people, you know, and my response was the NFL does this too, where it's 4th and 1 and they're snapping the ball in the shotgun. And now you're putting yourself 6 yards behind. You're right. And again, right or wrong, better or worse, that's gone now. There's something in that short yardage. If you're going to do a QB ISO, my initial thought is, hey, put him 6 yards back so that he's got 5 yards to pick up ahead of steam.
Yeah.
Right? Well, but that's not what's working for them. Even when they snap the ball to the shotgun, Dale is not picking up ahead of steam going into the line.
No.
He's sitting there slow. It's like a Wake Forest slow mesh. When he snaps the ball under center or whether it's in the shotgun, he takes a step back and he just stands there. He just sits there and he lets the play develop, and it's this game of chicken, right? The D-line gets taken out by the O-line, and it's this game of chicken between Bryson Daly and the linebackers, and he just waits for them to overcommit one step, and then he finds the hole, right? So I think there's something to that, too.
They're doing that on 4th down, too. If you look, all the 4th down plays, almost all of them are quarterback power plays or quarterback zone plays, and it's not – you know, for the most part, it's not the tush push. It's take a step back, let the block develop, and then dive through the hole, wherever that happens to be.
Yeah. By the way, this might be my inner Matt Drinkle talking, but I would love to see one of these, like, okay, it's 3rd and 1, and they've run the QB ISO 3 times that game, and then they step back like they're going to do a QB ISO again, and Noah Short is open for 15 yards downfield because everyone's expecting the QB ISO, and they pop one. I don't think we've seen that yet, but, oh, man, that would make me happy.
Yeah, one of the plays I saw on 4th down last year, too, you know, and Washington did it, which was completely innocuous, right, was the toss sweep. So you go under center looking like you're going to go for, you know, the old bush push. And as soon as you snap the ball, QB just tosses it and you've got the edge because everybody is packed inside the center. So I know that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different wrinkles. And again, you probably don't want to, you probably don't want to show them all too early in the season because, of course, you got a Service Academy game. But like right now, if I'm Air Force, I'm going, oh, crap. Like I'm going into probably one of the most physical, you know, CIC games that we've had in a very, very long time, like a very long time. I think they've got their work cut out for them defensively, because when you look at, the way that both the line is playing both on offense and defense for Army, they are moving people out of the way, and it's creating opportunities on both sides of the ball. And like I said, if you've watched any of the Zoomies at all, they do not look very physical this year. And so it's going to set Army up for success, because again, if you can't get up for a CIC game, if you're Air Force, then you're not getting up at all.
All right. There's one more thing I want to talk about on offense, and I'll kick it to you guys for anything you guys want to bring up. Tyrell Robinson came back, had the one run, right? I got a text message from our friends at the Boneyard podcast beforehand. Hey, is he 100%? Are they going to give him a long leash, this and that? And my initial response was, you're not going to play as a running back in Army's offense if you're not 100%, because on most plays you're blocking, right? And a running back is not going to play at 70% if his main job is to block. And I get, right, they didn't want to go to the perimeter this game. Their game plan was throwing in between the tackles. And, you know, when the ball ended up on the perimeter, it was good, but that was sort of by happenstance. Rob talked about, hey, Casey Reynolds, big explosive player, right? Kanye Udoh, big explosive player. He didn't have quite the game this week, but Noah Short, big explosive player, right? Man, if Tyrell Robinson gets going, imagine having four guys on the field that can break a run at any time, right? Like, if Tyrell Robinson gets a couple of 40, 50-yard rushes in the next few games, who are you keying on?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was surprised they only gave him one carry, but I think that's just the way it worked out.
I think it was a game plan. I don't think they cared how many carries they gave him.
I don't think he was ever getting more than five.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Noah Short never gets more than five, but
I'm saying is I don't think they were going to let him get hit too many times. You know, they let him get in there, get his face dirty. You know, he broke off a run for 21 yards.
He got some blocks in the game. I mean, yeah. I was impressed with how much contact he had in the game despite only one run. I don't know. I mean, something to keep an eye on for sure.
Well, I mean, at this point, now you have an extra, you know, you have an extra pain in the butt. So I got Casey Reynolds on one side. I got Noah Short and, you know, Robinson in the backfield. Both are great receivers. You throw in Hayden Reed and, you know, the flex bone becomes a passing formation, which when have we ever said that at Army? You know, that the
they've done that several times this year, though. Like, yeah. You know, you see them 30 seconds left in the half and it's like they're going to kneel it down. Nope. They come out four wide. And they're dead serious about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's like now there's enough talent that you can actually get mismatches, right? Yeah. And I think that's something that we haven't seen for a while. You know, like we haven't seen like, oh man, like if I split out Noah Short, Casey Reynolds, and Tyrell Robinson in a trips formation to the right hand side of the field. All right, I'm a cornerback. Great. Hey, can somebody come over here and help me out? Right. Cause that's literally all you can do. One of these three dudes is going to burn me. So I'm going to need some assistance.
And yeah, I mean, if nothing else, right, that sets up hey, it's right before the half, you know, they're at the 40 yard line and they go trips, right. It sets up the possibility of a nice 20 yard run to get a field goal before the half, because your DBs are spread thin. Okay. You guys got anything else offensively?
No, I think, like I said, I think the offense is solid. We're seeing a performance that we haven't seen out of Army in a while on offense. And so I think it's just a matter of like enjoying this moment while we have it, you know, because it's an embarrassment of riches right now. And we have a lot of experienced talent in the backfield, and, you know, a couple guys will be back next year. And, you know, not for nothing, Dwayne Coleman is not a slouch either. He's not Bryson Daly, but.
Well, not yet.
But yeah, he's still in the system developing, which is great.
I will say I got frustrated with the play calling at the beginning of the fourth quarter because Kanye Udoh was getting swallowed up. It seemed pretty clear that they didn't want to run Bryson Daly, you know, more than 31 times, especially up three plus touchdowns, which I understand. But if that's how they felt about it, I wish they would have brought Coleman in to work with the ones. Yeah.
I think that could do Coleman some good. Like, I would love to see him behind the ones.
Yeah. I mean, every time he comes in, he's not with the ones. That would have been an interesting experience. But, okay, you know, listen, we tried four-minute drill with Kanye Udoh twice, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Against a team that was ready for it.
Right, yeah. Okay, cool. Let's move on. We're going to go to special teams first, just because I know everyone wants to talk about defense. Punter James Wagenseller had three punts, averaging 40 yards, which is pretty impressive because one of them was kind of a shank. He did have one 51-yarder, which helped at that average. Plays kicker Trey Granati made a 32-yard field goal. I believe that's only his third field goal on the year. He was 6 of 6 on PATs, still perfect for the Army place kicker. And starting to get a little bit better on kickoffs, by the way. Like, he's getting it far enough that those teams aren't bringing it past the 25, and the coverage is good on the kickoff unit. All right, let's go to defense. Obviously, lights out first half, complete shutout. ECU gained just 110 yards. Army's defense caused 4 3-and-outs and a turnover, a four-play turnover on downs and an INT. They only saw the field for 11 minutes of game time that first half. Rush defense performed well all game, allowing just 87 yards on 20 rushes. Again, that's not a phenomenal yards per carry. It was enough to force some throws on obvious passing downs. They prevented the explosive rushing plays. Big thing I took from it, we talked about, hey, ECU is great at these chunk plays. Man, they kept, at least until the last 10 minutes, those chunk plays were small chunk plays. They got a 12-yard chunk. They did not get their 25-yard chunks. So that was a good thing to see. ECU finishes the day just 3 of 11 on third down, 2 of 3 on fourth down, and they punted 5 times, obviously went for it a few times, and didn't get it on the one time. It didn't get it on fourth. Safety Max Domenico led the team with 7 tackles. Usually that's not a great sign when your safety is leading the team in tackles.
Your safety can make 7 tackles. Come on.
Your safety can make 7 tackles, but typically you want to see your linebackers with 10. DBs, Casey Larkin, and 2 of the linebackers, Caleb Fortner and Brett Jarena, each had 6. Obviously, the lack of tackles had to do with a lack of total amount of offensive plays for the Pirates. Team didn't record any sacks, but they had 4 TFLs, which was good news. Second half, completely different story for the Black Knight defense. So gave up 28 points in the game, obviously all in the second half. 21 of those came in the final 10 minutes of the game. Won't get too deep into the stats because it was garbage time. I know we're going to talk a little bit about how many starters were in the game and things like that. But at the end of the day, right, if a team is going to score more points when you're trying, as Dan said, to run the 4-minute drill twice and it doesn't work, they're going to have the ball more. They're going to be able to do more. Your defense is going to be more tired. Not necessarily a straight comparison to the rest of Army's second half performances this year. It was garbage time, but it obviously a little disappointing. So let's get some takes on the defense. Dan, you want to start?
Okay, so here's my hottest take of all. Caden Hauser, actually a pretty good player. It has taken him 6 quarters to settle in as the ECU starting quarterback, but now that he's actually got some game experience and they let him throw downfield instead of throwing all those freaking swing passes that they had him throwing in the first half, he played better. That's my hot take. He made the number of plays that you would expect him to make based on ECU's SP plus and Army's SP plus. It just so happens that they all came in the 10-minute space of time. And oh, by the way, that corner touchdown was out, and they had dudes in position to stop the other touchdowns. They just didn't make the tackles.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Dan. I watched some things after the game, and they're really good about, they have this hurry-up offense. They slowed it down this week a little bit, right?
And by the way, they did better when they slowed it down. That's not a coincidence.
Here's one thing that I noticed. The principle of the hurry-up was still there. In other words, what they wanted to do was not give the defense time to react. Now, they didn't get to tire the defense in the same way because they were snapping the ball with 12 seconds left on the clock instead of 22 seconds left on the clock. But what they did was they didn't get into a formation until Army's defensive player with the coach to player speaker got cut off. So Max DiDomenico, I believe he's the one with the mic in his the speaker in his helmet. He's not getting anything from the sideline, right? Nate Woody's not in his ear. He's sitting there basically calling the defense by himself. At least calling the defense specific to the formation. That's a hard thing to do as an offense, to be coordinated enough to like get out there and snap and go. And when you have a quarterback that has only played 2 quarters of football coming into Saturday, it takes some time to get used to that. And they got used to it and they started performing better. I think that's a huge part of why it took so long for him to get into it. I think the offensive coordinator needed some time to figure out how that was going to work, and they did figure it out. But man, I think I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, this team is not terrible. Like, no. Army's played a lot of bad teams, but ECU is not one of them, which is why it was so shocking that they fired their coach, because they got every chance to go 3-3 or four and four this coming Saturday. Like, they could still make a bowl game. I think they will make a bowl game. It's a little nuts.
I have an opinion on why he got canned. I think they knew he was getting, they wanted him fired even before today, before Saturday, excuse me.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think that there were a significant number of players that can now not transfer without burning a year of eligibility now that they've played against Army.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And like my whole thing on the second half is like, again, the defensive adjustments just weren't there. And like you said, I didn't even look at the game clock for the coach to player communication. So I'm sure that did have an impact on it. But like anytime somebody's running, you know, quad or triple formations, you know, as a defense, you have to adjust to that. So either you bring in a nickel package, you call a timeout, you drop an end, something has to happen to account for that, you know, that additional receiver. Because if you just move the safeties over to cover that guy, you're in cover zero. And that is going to, you know, and all it takes is one move and that guy's in the house, you know. And so I think it's a little, you know, I think it's a little, you know, it's a little bit confusing to watch that because not everybody watches defense all the time. And I watch quite a bit. And so there was a lot of cover zero in that, you know, that last 10 minutes of the game. But it literally was because it's like, hey, I got four wideouts over here. I have to cover this. And, you know, sometimes it's better just to call the timeout, burn one, and then make the adjustment based off of the personnel package that's on the field than, you know, letting the opposing team score. You know, and, you know, the difference between good, great, and elite, you know, good teams win, you know, great teams freaking keep the score low, elite teams have shutouts, right? And you know, and you have to look at it that way because what is the next – you know, what is the next thing for Army? And that's to pitch a shutout and have it like an elite, like, wow, these guys are the real deal kind of game. And what we saw in that last 10 minutes wasn't that. If we could have got more play like the first half in that last 10 minutes, I think everybody would be a little bit happier. But I sent Dan a text, you know, earlier in the week, and we were talking about it. It was like about a year ago, everybody was freaking wailing and gnashing of teeth about us going, you know, into a conference. Like if I would have invested in all the tears that were being cried by the Army fan base going into the American Conference, like I could have freaking, you know, changed the whole course of the financial future of the United States because everybody was crying about us joining a league. Right. So again, sometimes you have to sit back and watch things, how they happen, but you know, it wasn't a great look, but it wasn't like awful either. And again, you took what was a great win and turned it to a very coachable win. And so I know that they'll make adjustments off of that. So it's not really a lose-lose situation.
I mean, at the end of the day, they won by 17 points. If they had not scored that last touchdown and ECU scored another one and so they just like squeak out a win, then I think, you know, some of this wailing and gnashing of teeth might be justified. But as it is, you know, it's,
I mean, you got to think they did have some second stringers in the game at the end.
Yeah.
And I think they probably would have had more, but I think they really did need, I mean, I think there's a reason why specifically Max DiDomenico played four quarters.
Yeah.
I think because he had to call the defense, right? Army got burned one time. They broke one time all game against a quarterback that was starting to click. There were only four plays over 20 yards, and then there was the one touchdown where they got burned for 50 plus. And that was
That was just a missed tackle. I mean, the kid was right there. He just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you'd rather not miss the tackle, but that's a physical mistake, not a mental mistake.
Right, right. There was no, you know, there's no issue with the defensive scheme necessarily, which is always good to say. All right. Before we wrap up the review, you guys got any final thoughts?
By the way, all of the ECU's comeback actually occurred in the fourth quarter. Army scored their fifth touchdown with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter. So that whole, all of it, it seemed like it took forever, but it was almost all in the fourth quarter. And it was really only the first half of the fourth quarter. So, I mean, it was almost like a swoon. In the quick takes, I likened it to a boxer, you know, like you get punched and it's, oh crap, did I just get punched? But, you know, so what?
Right. Now, again, I can remember a game at Ball State where they got punched in the face in the first quarter and they could never recover.
Absolutely. So
it's one thing to let that happen when you got some of your starters out, fourth quarter up by four scores. Like, that's one thing, you know. Just got to make sure it doesn't happen in the first quarter, I think, is the key.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool. All right, well, let's get to fact or fiction review. I said last week Army scores more than 33.5 points. That was a fact. Dan and I had the fact on that one. Rob said Daly throws two touchdown passes this week. Nearly fact, but it was a fiction. I believe everyone had that right except for Rob. Sorry, man. Dan,
against Air Force.
Yeah, Kanye Udo leads the team in rushing this week. That was fiction. He did rush for 100-plus yards, which was an incredible performance given the ECU defense defensive scheme. But Bryson Daly takes home that title with his highest ever rushing total, 107, was 174. So big day from old Bison. I think I was the only one that said fiction on that. Everyone else was an optimist. Dan, you want to take us to our friend Craig?
So if you've listened to this show before, you know that Craig Oxane is the vice president of residential lending for New American Funding in Chicago. Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states. But based out of Chicago, he is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. He's going to offer you super competitive rates, give you the best deal he possibly can, which matters because the mortgage process is very confusing. Interest rates moving all over the place. You got to sign a ton of paperwork. You would really like to deal with an actual person and not like some AI or random big box bank, mindless website, whatever, call center. And friends, this is how the West Point Network functions, right? Craig is helping us stay in business here. And as for football, we're trying to help you by giving you the best mortgage hookup that we possibly can if you're trying to buy or refinance your house. Plus, Craig doesn't charge lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings, like $1,300. $1,300. Get that money. Craig Oxane, his link is on our website. Just scroll down. He's got a little business card there. Click on it. You fill out a little questionnaire. Be talking to him in a couple of hours. It's too easy. And I'm telling you, everybody gives this guy 5 stars for service because that is his business.
Fact.
That is correct.
Or fiction.
Incorrect.
All right. We are going to go to fact or fiction for next week. We're going to try something a little different, and then we'll get into our fun interview. So our fact or fiction this week, I just picked 4 games with relatively close scores or that maybe have some national appeal. And we're going to pick the winners of these games. Unfortunately, Jordan's not here, so we'll have to get his picks in later. So first one we'll rock through is Brigham Young versus Central Florida.
Oh, it's BYU.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought UCF was a better team before they lost at Colorado. But now, yeah, I don't think they're bad, but I don't think they're beating BYU.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to go Central Florida. I believe they're at home. They're 2.5-point dogs. I think UCF puts it together, and they control the clock with their run game. So I'm going to go with the upset on that one.
Oh, that's a scorching hot take.
Yeah. All right, next one, Texas A&M versus Louisiana State.
Rob said in the last show that this game didn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably true. Well, I don't know. I think this is an elimination game. I think the loser of this game can't go to the playoff.
Oh, so loser leaves town? I would take Texas A&M.
Give me LSU, man. I'm not a believer in the Aggies. I don't want to. I just don't want to. I choose not to.
All right. I'll give you. I'm gonna take A&M just because I really want to watch Brian Kelly cry. But I'll go A&M. Quick update: UCF is actually a favorite at home against BYU. They're a point and a half favorite.
That's nuts. Yeah, that's nuts. That's not correct.
And ESPN's FPI has them as favorites. So
that's also incorrect.
It's like Paul Feinbaum must have wrote that assessment.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Let me write that down. All right. Next one up, we're going to go with Boise State versus Nevada, Las Vegas.
I I wish, sorry, Rob, I wish that I thought UNLV was going to win, but I do not. I think Boise not only wins this game, they win the Mountain West, they get to the playoff. I just think they got the pole position and ain't nobody going to beat them out.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a playoff game and on the Smurf turf this year. I'm going to go with Boise as well.
That's a scorching hot take. Playoff game at Boise?
We talked about this in the last show. So if Alabama makes the playoff as a two-loss SEC team, they should have to play at Boise, right?
No.
Yeah. Yes.
Hold up. Are you saying should as in a
moral sense? As in if they're football gods that we all believe in.
Oh, yeah, sure. They should have to, but they're not going to.
That's fair.
Because we're not actually putting money on this, I'm gonna pick with my heart instead of my head. Nevada, Las Vegas. Let's go running Rebels. I'm praying for it. Here's the thing. I think Boise's on an extra week of rest right now, and they're stale. They're an explosive team. It takes them a quarter and a half to really get it going. UNLV's already rolling, and they take it to they take the upset. It's a closer line than you'd think. What's the line's 3 points? Games in Las Vegas.
I'll take Boise State to cover.
I think Boise gets a little maybe they go out the night before in Las Vegas. Some of the boys are getting a little having a few too many. I like UNLV. I'm going to pick with my heart here. Next up, we got the probably number two national game of the week behind A&M LSU is Navy Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. They had their slip up this season already. I think they're going to roll the mids. Yeah,
not only do they win, I think they cover.
So lines 12 and a half. That's interesting. Rob, you think they cover or just
win? I think they cover.
I think they just win.
Broader conversation. We'll keep it short, but I agree. I think Notre Dame wins. I think the line's about right at 12 and a half. It's tough for me because both with Army and Navy, I don't know if the scheme that they're running on offense right now is schematically sound or whether it's the fact that it's sort of new and they've been playing bad teams, right? Like I don't know if Navy's scheme is schematically. If it is, they have a chance to beat Notre Dame. If Notre Dame's defensive line is just going to overpower Navy, then Notre Dame probably covers. But I don't know.
We talked about this on the other show too. And Navy is a team that lives on big plays this year as much as last year, if not even more so. They don't make a lot of first downs. They score touchdowns on busted coverage, and against Charlotte they punted six times. So this is why I don't think Notre Dame is going to bust coverage. I don't think that they're going to be able to hit one of those wheel routes for a 50-yard touchdown. I think that they're going to need to grind out those first downs, and that's not what they've been doing.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I mean, it was a storyline last week against Charlotte. The Navy's third down conversion percentage was not
great. This is a problem. You're having this problem with Charlotte. Now you're going to play Notre Dame. You're not going to be able to get six interceptions. You're not going to, like the crazy shit that they got against Charlotte, they're not going to get. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we're happy to bring you a great interview with AJ Mayorski about the Lambert Trophy. We'll bring you in there now, and then when we're done, we'll come back and close up the show. All right, everybody, we got AJ here from Northeast Conference Blitz, NEC Blitz. You can find him on Twitter there. It's at NEC Blitz, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, sweet. NEC Blitz, and we're going to talk a little Lambert Trophy. So if you're a fan of the show, I've talked about it a little bit. The fact that it's coming back, obviously, super exciting. It's a huge part of the history of college football, and it's making its way back, into the Northeast region of the United States. So, AJ, let's just talk about number one, some history of the trophy, why it matters. Let's start there.
Ooh, I'm getting chills actually, even just thinking about that it's coming back. It's wild at this point because we're saying it's back. Now, right, we've actually made it to this point. So the trophy's from 1936 originally. We got the Lambert brothers, who were the principals in a jewelry business out in New York City. And their dad was a massive football fan, legend has it, and I think actually pretty well-established legend, that he died without ever seeing a football game. Back in those days, you know, you didn't see it on TV, so he followed in the newspapers and became a huge fan. He wanted his kids to play football, and they were not athletes. So after he died, they got together and said, we ought to do something to honor his memory and to make up for our own lack of athletic success. And so they founded the Lambert Trophy, kind of to the east region of the United States is what the SEC championship is to the southeast. You know what the Pac-8, Pac-10, and Pac-12 championship was to the west, and what the Big Ten championship is to the Midwest. Or, you know, before all the realignment nonsense kind of what was in this parts of the country.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is pretty cool about the Northeast, right, is, yeah, you know, the ACC played a round robin every year of conference play. The SEC did the same. The Big Ten wasn't quite a round robin, but, you know, you played every school at least 2 out of 3 years, right, throughout its history. The Northeast never had a conference, yet the schools felt close enough. There were some scheduling agreements, sure, but no formal conference. The schools felt close enough and like-minded enough and cared enough about their regional prowess that, you know, you had the Pitts, the Armies, the BCs playing each other so regularly, despite not being in a conference. I think you can sort of, despite them not being regionally associated, attribute Notre Dame to that general scheduling alliance there, just with their ties to the Catholic Northeast. But it's sort of cool to see how these schools, you know, the Army and BC don't have a lot in common. BC and Pitt don't have a lot in common. But the ties to the region, the ties to college football, and how they sort of worked through that and were able to schedule so many, you know, important football games throughout the decades, despite having no formal agreement.
Yeah, and it was actually closer at points than I think a lot of people might think. I would say that the Eastern Conference is pretty well established in the mythology of college football. Joe Paterno wanted an 8-team conference, never came to pass. But, I mean, some things like scholarship limits. West Virginia, Pitt, Syracuse, and Penn State all had a limit on how many athletic scholarships they would offer at one point. Kind of a conference-like thing. You mentioned Notre Dame. Yeah, I mean, Navy, Notre Dame, their history speaks for itself. Notre Dame and Pitt played each other. I think Pitt may be Notre Dame's fifth most played opponent. And, of course, games like Syracuse and Pitt have been going on since the Eisenhower administration without an interruption, you know, across independence to conferences. So there's always been a lot of familiarity between those schools in the East. There wasn't a formal conference, but even back in those days, like the SEC, you know, there's some weird scheduling quirks back there where some of the teams never really played each other much. The Northeast was not so different. So if this all happened today and TV contracts were where they were and everything, I'm sure there would have been a formal conference, but it wasn't really necessary for the time. So instead you had these very close relationships and no football conference. Instead, everyone kind of did their own thing, but there was a trophy everyone could agree on was the big prize. And, that's what we've got back now today.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now. 4 of the 6 games prior to 1950 that were AP1 versus AP2 were, you know, basically Army, Navy, or Army, Notre Dame. So these games mattered to the scheduling mattered to college football on a national scale. All right, so super important, you know, history of the Northeast, history of college football. We're back. We got the trophy back. It's happening. Super excited. How did we get here? How did we go? I mean, our listeners know, hey, 2021 and 2023 didn't get awarded. 2022 mm-hmm. got awarded via press release, which means the last time it was awarded and given out was what year? 2020?
Yep, to the Black Knights.
To the Black Knights, right. So the trophy's still at the Hall of Fame in the south end zone of Mikey Stadium. how do we get from, hey, the ECAC's not really, ECAC isn't really awarding this thing, to where we are now? It's back. It's coming back. There's going to be a trophy.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what we need to even say first is with the ECAC, there's a tremendous amount of respect for Northeastern football history and heritage. They weren't the right people to give out the trophy because they're an athletic conference. You know, the analogy I've used with a lot of people is, imagine if the Big Ten owns this trophy and Rutgers goes 10-2, but Navy goes 11-1. You kind of have to give it to Rutgers if you're the Big Ten, because that's your trophy. So they can't give it to everyone. So similar situation with this. They can't just hand it out. So they needed an independent party that was, one, willing, and two, really understood the heritage and what it meant more than they did. So, I mean, I reached out. We had a long series of meetings, kind of just talking about what the trophy was and how to get it back, what it would mean, and how we'd make sure that it was something that would endure. Basically, the previous problem was that the New York Metro Writers Association dissolved. There's no one left from that body. So we had to have something that would be lasting. And we were able to kind of provide a outline of how we would do it, you know, what we would take on and what we needed from them. And we've actually, you know, gone to the point where they said, yes, this is I wouldn't say that it's our trophy, because no one owns the Lambert. That's kind of what's so great about it, is it's bigger than everything. It is bigger than conferences. So no one owns this, but we're going to be in charge of making sure it gets to point A to point B, and it gets awarded properly, fairly, and in the spirit of what college football should be. So cool. Very short answer for you is, it was a lot of meetings.
Yeah. So right. So historically, right, this is sports writers that were in charge of awarding it. It goes to the conference. I don't know, or excuse me, goes to, yeah, the ECAC to award. I'm not quite sure what their process was in the years that they controlled it for awarding it, but it was at least able to live on for a period of time. Now it's back to effectively a conglomerate of sports writers and potentially, you know, people that work in sports in the Northeast in charge of awarding it. So that's always good. Okay, so let's talk about who's eligible for this trophy. You want to run with it?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I got contacted here and there by like people with Marshall and Liberty ties, and yeah, you know, sorry guys, not at this point anyway. Historically, it's been the Eastern Independents, and we're obviously past the point where we can say, oh, it's the Eastern Independents. At this point, that'd be UMass and Connecticut, and next year, just Connecticut. But those two schools, basically, with few exceptions, north of Washington, D.C., and east of Wheeling, West Virginia. So that includes all your Pennsylvania schools and FBS, you know, Pitt, Penn State, Temple, includes Morgantown, West Virginia, so WVU. That excludes Marshall on its own. And then you have Navy, Army, Syracuse, Buffalo, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Boston College, Rutgers. If you can tell, I've gone through this a couple of times.
In my head, to keep it straight, I've always thought of it as the three New England schools. So Boston College, UMass, UConn, the three Pennsylvania schools, Penn State, Pitt, and Temple, the three New York schools, Army, Syracuse, Buffalo, the New Jersey school, Rutgers, and then the two others. So really the three others total. So Rutgers, Navy, and West Virginia, and then next year, Delaware, right?
Delaware's in our footprint, and in the they've always been eligible for the Lambert Cup. They're in the agreed-upon geographical standards.
Yeah, so then the question becomes, hey, you know, broad strokes, West Virginia is eligible for this, Navy's eligible for this, Marshall's not eligible for this, Maryland is not eligible for this, and why? And one of the things that the group really talked a lot about at length was what this trophy is for, right? Maryland was not historically eligible for this trophy, despite being like a small percentage of a degree of latitude north of the Navy, because Maryland was in the ACC. They were in Southern conferences for a lot of their history, and this was not a conference trophy. Maryland aligned themselves with a lower Atlantic conference. This was not for that. This was not for them. Navy, for a long time, had to schedule a certain number of teams in the Northeast in order to be eligible for the trophy, but they have this sort of tie to regional independence that Maryland, you know, that Northeastern regional independence, Maryland just doesn't have. They didn't play all of those other schools at the same rate, that the same clip that Navy did. And the same is true about West Virginia and Marshall. So it was important to include the schools that sort of were traditionally eligible and have those ties to independence, you know, in the Northeast. Another, I think, important caveat to the eligibility rules, you know, one part of the history of this trophy, right? It's the Eastern Championship. You have now a conference from 1990 until, 2013 called the Big East. Well, the Big East had some rules. Hey, if you play at least half of your games against teams from the eligible areas and you're in the Big East, well, then, you know, you get to win the Eastern Championship trophy. So this leads to schools like Miami winning the trophy. You know, some of these schools that you wouldn't ordinarily expect to be eligible for the Northeastern trophy can win it. You want to walk through how we've sort of brought that back?
Yeah. And I mean, I actually would even say that one of the ways we got to this point was when I'm meeting with the ECAC, they said, you know, explain this trophy to us, because how did Miami win it? How did Cincinnati win it? And, you know, I was able to say, well, here's the Big East rule. And in retrospect, it makes more sense in the 1990s than it does to us today. All right. Because the Big East is a Northeastern based conference. Whenever, you know, the college football landscape was more or less broken into big conferences in regional areas, the Big East appeared because the Northeast, the East needed a conference there.
And remember, those other schools were not part of the Big East until football really gets roped in, right? I mean, BC's in the Big East, right? But they're not, but Miami isn't to start.
So once you get football into it, Miami joined as a full member the first year they sponsored football. Actually, I think it took them a couple years to even play a full schedule. But yeah, teams like that, I think West Virginia was only a partial member at first, but they are obviously in the area. Virginia Tech's the only other outlier, and they've won the trophy twice as well. But astute listeners will realize we didn't say Virginia as part of the eligible area. It's because this is not part of the traditional East. We agonized over it. I know you and I had a lot of good conversations about it. I think, you know, you really sold a lot of us even on just what are we doing here? Because we have the ability now to define what the East is. What should we be including in our umbrella? And if you get this wrong, you really get the whole spirit of the trophy wrong. So we can go by what's on Wikipedia, which says Virginia, but the truth is it's not the best source. And if you look through all the historical records, there was a time, guys, when the Lambert Trophy voting standings were in newspapers every week. The mm-hmm. top nine, top 10, whatever it was, were in there. Reasons only that many schools is because that's it. Virginia Tech and Virginia Maryland never appear in those rankings. So once you dial it back to there and you say, okay, we have no historical basis for including Maryland in this. We have no historical basis for including Miami in this today, just this rule that existed when there was a Northeastern Conference. So you start with the history. We started with who are the teams that have always been eligible for our trophy in FBS today. Have those teams add in basically who are the teams in a clearly geographic area that need to be involved and who are the teams that we should no longer involve because there is no Northeastern Conference today. Which is really another reason why it's so important that we've gotten a trophy coming back now and that, you know, gosh, we're doing something with it, because otherwise this region of the country is just split up into everything and we're not playing each other the way we ought to be.
Well, and when it comes to playing each other and incentivizing those games, right, that's part of the idea of that Big East rule. Hey, you play half your games in the Northeast, you know, or against Northeast teams, at least FBS Northeast teams, you get to be eligible for the trophy, right? And that incentivizes, hey, Miami, I might schedule a non-conference game against another team up there so that I am eligible to win that trophy, right? Now, I'm not saying that it has that influence anymore, but to that end, right? So correct me if I'm wrong, it's Maryland, West Virginia, and Virginia. If you're not an eligible school, but you schedule one-third of your games, of your regular season games, so not including conference championships, bowl games, anything like that, at the start of the year, you schedule a third of your games against FBS teams that are ordinarily eligible, so the ones we listed earlier, then you can apply for eligibility to that for the trophy.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it does extend even to, like, you know, if you're a former Big East member and you think you have a good argument, you can apply. That's a great rule because it has the effect of making sure, I mean, you can't really do much about Yale's half championship in 1960. But for the most part here, if you're an FBS and if you've won this trophy before, you know, you're not completely put out. There is that possibility. That said, I think the expectation is that, you know, we're going to be working with the Eastern schools primarily, and it would be terrific if Miami decided, you know what, you know, we've got to get Penn State back on the schedule. You know, we've got to make sure we're playing, you know, these teams up further north. Maybe they're going to play Buffalo, Army, Navy. But, you know, it's nice to have that option for them. It's nice to make sure everyone who's won it before is still in the hunt. But for the most part, yeah, we've got our 12, 13 next year Eastern schools.
Right. And obviously, as you mentioned, right, traditionally, FCS prior to the 1978 split, D1A and D1AA, you have teams like Yale winning, right? Now, no longer eligible. You mentioned the Lambert Cup. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Lambert Cup was something that, and we'll use the word was with the Lambert Cup. It existed following the split, and it gave FCS teams their own, you know, Lambert trophy, basically. It's interesting because being in the lower level, it is a little bit less well documented. You see teams like James Madison are always associated with the Lambert Cup. What's actually really interesting about it, though, is that if you look at teams like you would deem eligible for it today, almost all those teams have actually moved up to FBS. So that's your James Madison's. Basically, the teams left that have won the national championship and are not on their way up or up already are Villanova and Richmond, who, you know, is shaky grounds up at this level for if they could be eligible. But like your UMasses have won the Lambert Cup and they're now eligible for our trophy.
Yeah, and to be fair, right, James Madison at the time they were winning in the Yankee Conference, right, associated with the Northeast. William & Mary wins it. I'm looking at 1990 William & Mary, a winner of the Lambert Cup, right? They have Villanova on their schedule, Connecticut, Delaware, Bucknell, Lehigh, another, you know, fellow James Madison, Richmond, UMass, right? So they're playing a lot of these. Yes, they were an independent, but they're associating themselves with the Northeast, which, again, that's sort of the intent there. So I'd be interested to get into a little bit more of the history of that. Do we know where the Lambert Cup is right now, by the way?
So we haven't actually talked about that one at all, but I would be surprised if it's either not at the last place it was given out to or if it's one of those closet trophies that exists nowadays. Yeah, it wasn't something the UCA and AC and I even talked about. I actually thought that might be how our conversation wound up beginning, just because the NEC is the Northeast Conference. We're in FCS League. So I thought that might be how our conversation began about the Lambert at all, but we moved straight to the trophy. And from a historical perspective, it's the right thing to do. It's nice that the Lambert Cup exists. I don't want to diminish the value of FCS having the Eastern Championship as well, but it doesn't trace its origins back to 1936.
And the Northeast has always had its own FCS conferences as long as FCS has existed, right? Yes. Right. Well, Ivy League wasn't FCS immediately, but the Ivy League, the Yankee Conference, right? More recently, the Northeast Conference. You know, there are these conferences. So independence isn't necessarily a function of that like it is at the FBS level, at the major college football level. Cool. All right. Well, I'm super excited about it. I hope all the listeners had a fun time learning about it. AJ, thanks for doing everything you know, putting in all the legwork and getting this thing going. I think fans from a lot of schools around the Northeast are excited now that they have their regional trophy again.
Yeah, the excitement's real. It's been, I would say that for a long time, the best part was talking to so many people who were as pumped up about this as I was. To an extent, the Lambert Trophy has often been like a secret club for Eastern college football fans, or we know about this and we want it, but you know, the last 20 years, it's had a little bit of a publicity problem. On one hand, it's nice to be helping to cure that a bit, but the one thing it's starting to even beat that is just how many schools are receptive to the trophy coming back. And then just how many are saying things to me, and this is a verifiable, guys, I'm hearing it, that they want to do a little bit more regionally and have a little bit more going on in the East. So this might just be the tip of the iceberg of us doing some really good things for college football. And don't sell yourself short, because you have been a massive part of it, and I hope you know that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. So at Lambert Trophy on Twitter, that's L-A-M-B-E-R-T Trophy. Some people might know it as the Lambert Meadowlands Trophy that got added at some point. We're over that. So Lambert Trophy, we're fixing that. So at Lambert Trophy on Twitter, if you want to follow all the latest updates, at some point, you know, we'll talk if a website gets published or anything like that, if there's anything more, we'll push that out to our people, all of our listeners, so that all the Army fans can follow. And hey, what a year, right? Four ranked teams right now.
Yeah, better than that, you got four undefeated teams.
Four undefeated ranked Lambert teams. You got Penn State, Pitt, Army, and Navy.
And then you got Syracuse at 5-1.
What's that?
It's Syracuse at 5-1 as well. You can't beat it.
And you got a promising Boston College program, UMass joining a conference. I mean, Delaware coming up. It's an exciting time. Greg Schiano seems to slowly be turning things around at Rutgers, despite the surprising result last week. But, man, good year for the trophy to be back for sure. So, AJ, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on, and please keep us up to date on everything.
Will do. We'll be in touch.
All right. All right. That was our interview with AJ. Special thanks to him and everybody else involved in getting the Lambert Trophy back up and running. Why don't we go through our commercial here? Dan, you want to take this one?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about how you can help Astro Football last week. You know, Astro Football is growing. As we mentioned in the last show, you know, we talked to the Wall Street Journal today, of all places. It's like nuts. So I know that people who like AFF tend to really like Astro Football. And let me just tell you, the easiest thing that you can do to help us grow, sort of get the word out there, is to forward that weekly mailer to one of your friends who's not on social media. Like, it's not an issue that you don't follow us on social media. I mean, it's great. Follow us on Twitter, whatever. It's fine. But it's not that we don't want to interact with you. However, if you're a football fan who doesn't care about social media, like, that doesn't hurt our feelings, right? Follow us on our mailing list, forward that mailer to one of your friends who's not on social media. This is the ask. And then, of course, if you want to consider joining us on Patreon, we have extra written articles there. We have access to this show, to our top level patrons. I have a firsty club where we talk about stuff that we don't really talk about elsewhere because it's just a close group. And this is how you can support us. So I just want to throw that out there for people that enjoy what we're doing. If you want more, there's more. And, you know, definitely sign up for that mailing list if you haven't. And like I said, feel free to send that thing along to your buddy who likes Army football, but not social media. That dude or woman has lived a more healthy life than we are.
You know, my wife would say this is indicative of a problem, but, you know, the Yankees are in the World Series, and I'm like fiending for the new podcast to drop, or the new article to drop, or the roster to drop. And, you know, if you're like that about Army football, man, we have so much content this year. I used to, you know, I used to write the preview. I'd read Dan's, Keys to Victory and Quick Takes, because it's always fun. But now we got Omar with two AAC articles a week. Like, there is so much. If you just want that little bit extra Army content, you got nothing to do on your way home from work or whatever. It's there, and I'm really happy with just the volume of stuff we're getting out this year. It's pretty awesome. Last thing, I got a favorite thing. Army won 2 stars this past Saturday, both the women's cross country star. It's a second year in a row. And then the women's soccer star, well, that's a third year in a row for women's soccer. It brings the star series up to 6-2 Army on the year. So a hot start for the Black Knights. If nothing else, let's go beat the bye week.
Beat them.
Beat them.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Ask for Football Army Football Show. Big thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate, for supporting us and the Long Gray Line. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, reach out to Jocelyn. She's got your back. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the show with your friends. And as always, beat Nathan.